What's good, Wager World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada, and here with my co-host, my guy, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreadster? How are you today?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. This NBA season's been a grind for me, I'm hoping to turn around here and some of this hard work be pushing off for the playoffs, but fortunately, right? I connect with sharp people like you guys, Kino Real, just kind of leading me the right way here on these other sports that I don't always watch as much. And of course, we had a great time watching that LSU game. I know it didn't turn out how we wanted, but it was a lot of fun to see the women's game take such a center stage, and it was cool that the game lived up to the hype and lived up to the expectations, because after all that, if it had been like a 40-point blowout, it would have been pretty lame. So I know it didn't go the way that we liked, but it was a lot of fun. How have you been?
I've been good, man. We'll definitely get into that game when we get to the past, man, to kind of break it down. Super huge night for women's sports. The women had the whole nation watching them, and I think that's really great for a lot of the young girls who are coming up looking to play sports. Big day in Houston today. Big day for my Texans as the deal gets done where we get Stephon Diggs. He's now a Houston Texan. What do you think about the trade with Diggs coming to H-Town?
I've said before that in the new NFL, you make a choice. You either have a highly paid QB like Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, and you do your best, you know, to fill them around with whatever talent you can get under the salary cap. But, you know, it seems like the hack is if you get a quarterback that can perform at that same level but be on that rookie deal, you can just surround him with absolute studs. And Houston Texans general manager has realized that, and he's gone all in this year, right? We got four more years for Houston, right? Before they're going to have to pay him the big bucks. So you better surround him with some talent now, instill those winning ways. And once again, another great move by the Houston Texans. And I know for fantasy football, people are going to love this, but they've continued to stack up that line as well. So while the people, you know, that do Underdog and do DraftKings are going to gush all over this new Houston's offense, I think it comes down to not only are they giving him more weapons, they've bolstered both sides of the line. Seems like a formula for winning football to me.
Yes, definitely. Great job by Casario. And I look at it in this manner. At first, when I heard the news, and shout out to Antonio Brown, AB, he does a lot of goofy stuff on CTE, ESPN, but he's calling all of these transactions because he's a guy that a lot of dudes like. A lot of guys that came up in the league that are young looked up to AB. And even though he puts on the clown mask for the video, he reminds me of my old artist, Riff Raff, where he just, you know, goes into character on when the video comes on. Like Kanye goes into character when the video comes on, because these guys are brilliant enough to realize, like P.T. Barnum, that any press is good press if you don't care about people talking about you to make your money. You know, when they talk a lot of negative stuff about Antonio Brown so they don't take him serious about him, how he reports different things that are happening in the sports world. But man, he was right on point with this one and a couple more transactions that he called out before they happened. And he did a really good job of saying Diggs to Houston. That's the first time I heard it, was following his page. But as far as in it actually going and what went down with the trade, when I first heard about it, I was kind of like, man, I don't know if I want Stephon Diggs in our locker room. It's really peaceful. Everyone understands that C.J. Stroud is the leader. The receivers know their place. No one's begging for the ball. He might come in with a whole different type of energy, you know, because we all know that Stephon Diggs wants the ball. They, like most of these receivers are, he's a diva. So I was worried about that. Then when the transaction happened this morning, I took a step back. I said, let me not judge this guy so early, because we know how it is with the media. You only get half the truth. So we don't know if certain reporters in the Buffalo area didn't really like him too much. and maybe we'll report these things. I don't remember hearing anything bad about him out of Minnesota. So I think that Stephon Diggs had already passed the test with Nick Caserio and also with D'Amico Ryans. And I think that they already have spoken to him about everything and they're kind of on the same page. And D'Amico is the kind of guy that should get the best attitude out of a guy like Stephon Diggs, because I think he respects him immensely, you know. So if we get the best version of Stephon Diggs and he's a team player, he isn't trying to disrupt the distribution of the ball and things like that, he's going to be fine. CJ Stroud is the leader of this team. He's the clear leader. He needs to continue to control the radio in the locker room. I don't need Stephon coming over there trying to put on his favorite songs, you know what I mean? So hopefully everything works out. But if you look at it on paper without all of the extra thing that we know that really matters, which is the camaraderie, you just look at it on paper, it's an excellent move. I mean, it's one of the most potent offenses in the AFC immediately when you look at everywhere they have so much talent, whether it be at the receiving spots or even their 5th and 6th receivers, like Xavier Hutchinson and the kid out of Alabama. They're both really good players that have a chance of being special. And they're at the bottom of the depth chart right now and probably won't get much room because of the top three. We already know Tank Dell, is just probably one of the already top three deep threats in the league. And he's only a rookie, not going into his second season. Him and CJ Stroud are best friends. He's going to eat. He's going to get his balls. But, man, with that type of stretching that he does, and then Nico can beat you either deep or with the intermediate routes and the 15-yard dig routes, man, it's going to be really tough for them to match up with Diggs in the slot, man. So this offense is going to open all the way up. And then we're forgetting about, you still got Joe Mixon as the, bell cow in the backfield toting the rock and a really slick play caller over there too. So things are looking really up for the Texans, one of the greatest turnarounds we've seen in NFL. And as I say all the time, they're going to end up doing a movie one day about the owner's wife, man, and how she really helped save Houston football.
All right, well, I can't wait to see that. And maybe you'll be one of the guys producing that, because I know you do more than sports betting, and you, of course, have those roots really deep in that Houston entertainment scene. Let's talk about PJ Tucker, some parlay bets, and how, I hate to be like a regulatory guy, right? But we don't let people just buy a car and start driving, right? You got to go get a driver's license, right? Maybe we need to take a little test, right? Just some basic questions. If you lose a bet, is it okay to berate a player? If you lose a bet, is it okay to send them Instagram messages, right? I mean, just a simple little test, a regulatory licensing here, because it's really frustrating for people like us who have been doing this for a while, and actually have this community of sharp, philanthropic, right? Helpful people. There's so many people in the gambling community. I can just send them a question, right? Hey, I'm having problems on my model. Can you give me some help here on maybe this formula or how can I do this? And you get all these answers, right? And then you have our community being represented by people like this. I know we feel the same way, but go ahead and give your thoughts as more of these fans just continue to make what we're doing look bad.
It's the same nerds that have no business to have access to this type of privilege, man. And I'm not one. I'm one that's all for everyone, having opportunities and everything. That spread, but come on, man. It's like, what are you doing? You're at these games. If you pay your tickets to come to the game, sit down and enjoy the game. Boo scream, but don't call out to a player and say, hey, man, I need you to score another three-pointer. I need a 20.5 because it automatically tanks the bet. Now you're dealing with breaking a federal law, but it's kind of like you're fixing the game now, man. You're putting these players in a real bad position, because what are they supposed to do? If they're right behind the bench and you're talking to them about, hey, man, I need you to get two more rebounds, it's the second quarter, and they even hear you and respond to you. Now you're putting these players in all types of jeopardy because of some stupid bet you made. And if it should sit that close, it's probably an expensive bet. You probably put a couple units. But now, man, you need to go check into a rehab for, you know, gambling degeneracy, because you're dealing with some real issues if you're going to these games and heckling these players. David Aldridge is one of the most respected reporters in the NBA. For him to do a whole write-up in The Athletic about this, it's crazy, man. And like I said, it's mostly, you'll be surprised, it's not even the people who don't have money that's doing it. Because for players to hit, you got to be where? Spread near the bottom of the floor, the good seats, the expensive seats. Yeah. It's these spoiled brats who are out here, and most of them are gambling fanatics, or some of them even have their own books. I know in Houston, it's a lot of little spoiled kids with you know, sports books. I told you about the situation I had with one out here a couple years ago where he owed me some money. These little kids, life about models. Everything's about numbers, and then everything's about making money. And they see sports betting as well making money. So a lot of times they have their own books. And a lot of these kids that are in these stands hollering at these players, I guarantee you, running their own books. They have their own books going. And if this guy hits a certain number, it affects their payout. But you know that it's some snobs that are doing it because they're close enough where the players can hear them. I don't know why they let all these jerks gamble. Like, it was just fine to me, the system where it used to be. And it was a lot better on us, Fred. I know I complain about this all the time. I know that the people who listen to this are like, man, in my state, I'm glad I can gamble. I'm sure you're a fine person who understands how to. But for the most part, it's just a bunch of jerks, man. And they shouldn't be allowed to go to these games and influence these players by talking about their little dumb parlays, man. You know what you bet, keep it to yourself. This player doesn't want to know anything about what you bet, man. Because like I said, what you don't understand is you're really tampering. Like, this is tampering that you're doing, man. So stop bothering these players if you're going to go to the game. All of you were so addicted to gambling that you feel like it's necessary to DM a player. Stop it, man. You're DMing these guys and threatening them, man. And I really hope that the feds get involved on this, man. I'm never one to want anyone to go to jail, but I can't stand stupid stuff, man. And they're really ruining sports. We as professional gamblers want to be able to bet sports and still have fair sports and enjoy watching sports when we're not betting. They're making it where every game is a bunch of mess now. You know what I mean? And it's going to continue to get worse and worse. This shouldn't be something that you're doing and feel so engaged in that you got to contact this person. This is a person playing professional sports. You made your decision to choose them or to pick them. You cannot involve them in your bets. And that kind of stumbles into also just the venom of social media. It's like a gift and a curse, man. These kids are getting paid a lot of money for going on social media. My son's one of those guys. He's a little influencer, has all of these, you know, people following him, watching his YouTube channel and stuff, and they monetize and they make money, they get sponsors and everything. So I appreciate the hustle. That's the gift of it. But the curse is you have all of these people attacking you from left and right. And as we prepare to talk about Angel Reese, we'll get into her a little bit later. Okay, DJ Burns, did you see about what happened with DJ Burns' spread?
No, I saw that on the script, and I was just going to throw it to you, but I didn't see any of that.
DJ Burns received a letter he posted on social media. He says he gets these all the time. Spread, if you read the letter, how the guy talked to him, you'd have swore it was 1860. That's why I can't believe people have the audacity to sit up here and say when I talk about different racial situations that are happening, because you know, Spread, you know me very well. I could give a damn for persons, black, red, gray, white, yellow. But what I do deal with is facts and truth. And the truth is, there's a lot of people out here who are racist and have a lot of hate in their heart for people who are over their skin still in 2024. And that's a damn shame. They wrote this kid, man, and talked to him and called him so many foul names, man. And then such a dumbass, they put at the end, it's so obvious, you should act more like me, a sophisticated black person. Like, yeah, right. Come on, man. Like, we know who wrote this letter. Why are you writing a kid that's 22, 23 years old in college threatening their life? Why are you doing that? I've never wanted to be by police. I was born with the NWA when it came to police. So. But when I got older, you know, and became a citizen and understand the structure of safety and rules and regulations, I've been more about respecting that side of the employment field, because those guys sacrifice a lot to keep a lot of us safe and stuff that we don't even take serious or even, you know, pay attention to. But they need to create a force, man, that's strictly dealing with social media, like attacking people, threatening them. You're sending a person a letter behind the game. Like, we're sending this kid a letter and talking about him so bad, calling him all of these foul names, and then at the end threatening his life. Like, come on, man. We got to do better as a society, Spread.
And I've seen the same things, too, and it's well-known knowledge at this point that the creators of social media, they used the way that slot machines, that was their focus. That's how they built this. They said, we need this to be as addictive as a slot machine. And they succeeded, and it's to a detriment of society. And I told you before we went on the air that I've been using Amazon for its original purpose, and that's just buying books, right? Remember, Amazon right. started as a bookstore.
Right.
It wasn't all in every. I also got some SodaStream too today, right? But for me, I noticed the sweet spot for me on social media is about an hour and a half to 2 hours per day. Because yeah. I need to get on, right? I wanted to see the Stephon Diggs news, right? contact my friends, you know, talk to you. We met through social media.
Right.
So I'm not saying we need to get rid of it, but you need to understand there's a law of diminishing returns on the time you spend on there. For me, I figure there's about an hour and a half or 2 hours of actual good information I need, and the rest of it, it's just making me mad. And I also think that the proportions are direct for how much time you spend on social media and your happiness.
Yeah.
Because all the people that are mad, they're out living their lives, right? They're
That's
their kids'
right.
soccer games.
Right.
They're involved in PTA meetings. They're having dinners with their friends. They're going out to restaurants. They're not scrolling and trying to attack everybody for anything that they said or could have possibly did wrong. So this is something we're going to have to mitigate in the future. And it's really worrisome if for people our age when we see the younger generation who's grown up through this and the amount of time they spent. I was downtown. I went to an Easter vigil on Saturday night, but it's downtown right where I used to live, which was the heart of the social scene in Sacramento. I was shocked at how few people I saw out and about.
No one even cares about holidays anymore. No one.
I'm just saying in general, the kids don't even go out.
No, I mean, no one does anything anymore. They're all inside my team, bro. I have to force him to go outside. It's up to him. He would be on his iPad and watching people play video games all day. Not playing the video game himself, watching other people play as gamers. What they've done is really dumb us down as society and, you know, created where now people, some people actually don't care. They're numb. Some people they've created, had to create a toughness on their skin. Like I have to teach myself even, you know, to not respond to some of the stuff. I've had some people say some really bad things to me on social media, man. And it got to the point where
I get a freaking pick wrong.
Man,
right? They want to go and call us all these names because we got a pick wrong.
All of these names. If we have an opinion on a topic like this, man, I got so much hate on X for talking about Dusty Baker and taking up for him. And now the Astros, they're 1-5. And no one's saying anything. You know, they're still finding ways. Yesterday, this guy's a local guy in the media in Houston. I think he's on 610, Pendergast. This guy finds a way during the no-hitter that the Astros will have, and this is about to be Joe Spada's first win as a major league manager, something special as a no-hitter thrown by the kid Blanco. He's still talking about watching this and seeing Yadier Diaz as the catcher. Only makes me think more about how much I can't stand that Dusty Baker didn't play him last year. Manager contempt. I'm like, even in the best of times, you're still thinking about Dusty Baker. He's at home fishing, man. That lets you know that you were hating him from a whole different place. It had nothing to do with how he was calling the games, because we all know that Dusty Baker was a Hall of Fame manager. So what do you have personally against this man that even after he's retired, you're still talking about him? And then not only that, you're a media member with a platform. So you're spewing this hate and guys are loving it and running with it. You know what I mean? And it's so disgusting to me, man.
And that's why I had to spend less time on Twitter, because it's amazing to me that all these people on Twitter who, first of all, couldn't make their high school team.
Right.
I'll be one of them. I could not make my high school team. To be fair, right, we had NBA players on that team, and a majority of them had scholarships to Division I schools. But still, I couldn't make my high school team. Can you imagine me going on there and acting like I know more about basketball than Steve Kerr, who played with Michael Jordan under Phil Jackson and then worked for Greg Popovich? Go to Warriors Twitter. They all know more than Steve Kerr about basketball. It's just unbelievable the audacity and the arrogance that some of these people have to think that they could coach and they understand more about basketball than Steve Kerr, who's won, three, four championships?
It's crazy. It's terrible.
They act like Mark Jackson doesn't know anything about basketball. Mark Jackson was a good Doc Rivers, right? They won't all think they know more about basketball than Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable to me. The way these guys, and they want to fire everybody too.
Yeah, social media has brought the worst out of society, and I hate that because it has created, like I said, a lot of money for people. But what good is money if now we don't have good humans, man? It's a lot of foul people. We know some of them are bots. It's not all real people. Some of these things are bots that are, you know, somewhere somebody in the lab got a million different things going out that they're typing up to keep division going, to keep everybody mentally unstable, where they're worried about things. Like, this is our reality's way to the world. I don't know if anyone's ever spoke to you about that. I don't talk about it much, but some things that we all know if we read. It's just some weird things that are going on right now, man. And like, for instance, spread fights. These fights come across my timeline all day. I try to get on social media for about, probably a total of about 30 minutes, but what I do is I spurt. So if I go on for 5 minutes, I might just do a bunch of tweeting during those 5 minutes, and then I put it down and I'm not back on it for 4 or 5 hours. Yeah. But while I'm on there, I make sure that I go to topics that a lot of people are discussing and like, and say something, because we want our algorithms to get people to know about the show to come to the site. So I make sure to get in a couple of areas, not too controversial, but make a little joke here and there, say some things to interact with the people so that we can get more people knowing about the show.
There's good and bad, but we got to really start recognizing some of the bad here.
Timeline spread. Every day I see about 10 fights come across my timeline from these fight different pages. Every time I tap where it says I'm not interested in this. You know, I try not to block them or nothing like that, because you know they might become a follower of the show, want to watch the show, whoever runs the page. So I put, I'm not interested in this, or I mute this. The next day, it's still filled with them. So I'm like, what is the algorithm in this that makes them say, we're going to give a middle-aged black man who covers sports nothing but kids fighting in school? You know, where's that? What are you trying to put off into me? What are you trying to, you know, give me? What kind of energy are you trying to pass to me? I don't understand that, man. So just be careful on the social media. Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark was dealing with it. It's both sides. Caitlin Clark, I'm sure, having people attack her and saying she looks like a man and things like that when they don't like her. Angel Reese was just crying after the game that we're going to speak about shortly.
Yeah, let's move straight into that, because what did you think about Angel Reese?
I think that Angel Reese is an honest young lady. I think she's just herself. She's got a lot of maturing to do. She talks a lot of noise, but it'll be different if she didn't go on the court and back it up with her effort. You watched her play. Like, she's giving her all out there. She's blocking balls, she's shooting. She's trying to get her team on pace. She's very smart. She told the team that they were falling off in the huddle. What do you guys want to take a bad shot? Stop shooting the ball. Get the ball down low and let's work from inside. We knew she was going to be dealing with the refs on that game against Iowa. You know, let's just go and jump into 1967 Chevelle, take it to the past.
In the past, let's do it.
All right. So, the Iowa game, let's get to the game first that led to the controversy after. During the game, we knew that the LSU wasn't going to get a good Wilson, and they did. And they allowed Iowa to muck it up down low. play really aggressive against them. Get a lot of block shots that were fouls against the LSU girls, but the LSU girls didn't help themselves by shooting free throws very poorly during the game. It was Kaylin Clark and Iris Knight. They were unbelievable from the three-point line. If you shoot that type of clip that they were shooting, you're not going to lose the game, and especially if you're being allowed to play aggressive defense. So great job by Iowa, not taking anything from them. I think they won that game. Even though the refs were making bad calls on LSU, LSU still did not outplay Iowa. Iowa played just a phenomenal game, especially offensively. Kaylin Clark, she lives up to the billet every time. Takes a lot of shots, scores a lot of points. But what I do like about her, she's always in control. If they need a basket, she can always get them either an easy basket from an assist or make the shot herself. So she's a phenomenal player, and her records show that. After the game, Angel Reese broke down. I'm sure she's upset, sad about losing. She had big hopes of repeating as a champion. And with the competitor she is, she began crying and kind of being a girl, like just telling what she's been going through. So she said she's been sexualized, but that's just one part of it. She said other things too that we know going on social media, like we just spoke about, with people saying racist stuff, people being insensitive, people being bigots. So she's dealt with all of that. But we're seeing a lot of these grown-ass men, like the owner of Barstool, like the owner of Outkick. Why are you messing with a young woman? Where I come from, men don't mess with women and pick on women in battles. You allow a woman to deal with the corporations, the media. You don't have a personal vendetta and call out a young lady as a grown-ass man. I feel like what they're doing is coming from a place of being not only some biased guys, but also straight being, for other words, a little kiddie. I'm not going to say the words that I really want to say that they are, because no grown man is looking to attack a woman in any manner. They're not looking for, because she's not attacking you. It'd be different if she said something specifically or personally to these guys. But they've taken it, and they make a lot of money because there's so many people who feel the way that they feel, which is a bad thing. Still, these are young women, man. They're young women. We're not supposed to be taking advantage of them, speaking to them in the same way that we deal with adult athletes. So that's for one. Angel Reese, they're saying that, oh, how were you sexualized when you took bikini pictures? Spread, what actress, artist, movie star, celebrity, anybody who even speaks on TV, how many of them can you go to their page as a woman and they don't have bikini shots now on their pages?
And most of the men are the same way.
Tennis. Every tennis girl
they
has
all got,
they don't even women. Have tennis they all on got, there anymore, spread. Yeah. They have bikini shots. You know why?
And the men do too. The men got themselves at the beach and they all got nice,
with their shirt off, because they're all thirsting for attention that social media has created a monster inside of them, because you're already dealing with people in this type of field, with them being in sports and entertainment, where you can tell they long attention. They need that. They love that. If they feed off of that. So what do you think they're going to do on their social media page? That's the thing that gets the most likes. That's what the people are loving, is you're showing your body. Yeah, I'm fine too. And so she's throwing on a bikini, and she got, from doing those bikini shots on her page, it turned into a money opportunity, because she was on Sports Illustrated. It was a time when I remember that was a great thing. Like, being on Sports Illustrated was looked at like, wow, she's a... But they used that against her and said she was, you know, playing a victim, and you're not sexualized when you're on the SI with a swimsuit, you're on your page with a couple swimsuits. One thing I didn't agree with that Angel did spread is she did a Brazilian wax thing with, I don't know if you saw that video, with a company. I don't know if she put it up or if the company did it, because sometimes the company did. That's terrible. Now, that I didn't agree with. You as a young lady don't allow people to show a mold of your vagina properly. You know, that's a bad thing. So if the company did it, they took advantage of the money they paid her and did something foul. Besides that, there's nothing I've seen her do on social media that isn't anything worse than a typical celebrity or typical athlete or female athlete is doing right now. And as you said, the males too.
I mean, it's the wild, wild west here with this new internet, not only with the gambling, but also with not just the treatment of athletes, but the treatment of other human beings. Yeah. You just see the stuff that people write about people they disagree with, whether it's politics, sports, whatever. And it's some pretty poor behavior. So
yeah,
and I don't have a fix, right? I'm not on here with the solution. So it's something that you know, Americans and humanity is going to have to navigate. So good win for Iowa. Tough loss for LSU there.
We cashed the under though. Remember,
we did catch the under on Haley Van Lilith. That was a nice one. But talk to me about the UConn game.
Okay.
Because I don't want that game to get lost in the shuffle, and I think that if Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese weren't here, Juju Watkins would be the talk of the women's basketball world, because she's a very impressive player as well. Not to mention Paige. I'm going to say her name wrong. Paige.
I just think it's Buckers, right? It's
Buckers. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That U threw me off. Okay. Yeah. UE threw me off.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's Buckers. If I'm not mistaken.
But it's good to see all this talent in the women's game, and they might continue to rival the men if the men continue one and done, and these women stay and play out their full careers at college. What did you think of UConn versus USC?
This was the non-controversial game. Last point, just real quick, on why we hit the Haley Van Lith under 11.5, and my whole angle on that was what we just talked about, social media, how they were going to be attacking her before the game for her comments about her teammates, you know, being treated wrongly in all these massive papers, and the pressure that she was going to have on having to defend that, and how, you know, that was going to be too much for her, and it was. She was a shell of herself. She easily goes under. Now to the game that was more about basketball, and that was UConn versus SC. Really good game. I thought that Southern Cal was going to be able to pull it out. They made a great run in the second half, and it seems like they were about to do what they've been doing all year, because we know they were 7-3 against the spread. No, excuse me, 7-1 against the spread as a 3.5 dog, and they also were 5-3 with that same +140, you know, outright. But they weren't able to do it. UConn's too good. Oriana is playing a little bit of tuck right now. You know, this is one of the few times that he's been the coach there that no one's looking at UConn and thinking that they can win the championship. I think Iowa better be very careful. We'll talk about that on Friday. I love Paige Buckley, man. She's just a baller. She's a hooper. Glad she's back from an injury. Super, super intelligent girl and very respectful, man. I like her a whole lot. Juju Watkins is a baller. Freshman. I think that in women's basketball, she has to come back. I don't think she can go to WNBA anyway. So we'll see her next year in LA. And she's only going to get better. As I said, I comp her to be the next Maya Moore. They got a lot of the same mannerisms. And they kind of favor each other just slightly as well, too. But I look forward to seeing UConn in Iowa play. It's going to be a lot less hate involved in that game and more appreciation for the girls in the game.
Yeah, so that'll be a fun one as the women continue to raise their level of attention here in the sports world, and rightfully so. So, right, some negative things going on, but I think we can be positive about that, right? I mean, yeah. Overall, we can say that women in sports is a good thing. It's good for the young girls. I know I have nieces, and they all like to compete, whether it's soccer, gymnastics, or tennis, right? Whichever ones they like to do. And I know in my life, even though it was not played at a high level, I learned a lot from all the team sports that I played, being part of a team, understanding sacrifice and the hard work that it takes. So it's good that it's not only men taking advantage of these team opportunities now. Let's talk about the NIT. Indiana State took on Utah. You had over, and then you doubled down there in the second half. So two winners for you in the National Invitational Tournament, which is no longer played at Madison Square Garden, now being played in Indianapolis.
Yeah, Indiana State is a great offensive team, and we know that Utah is as well. It was up and down, but Indiana State left them in the second half, really took off on them. They got the over in the first half. Remember, I was worried about that. That's why we didn't give out the first half, but we had the over for the game at 183. Ends up landing on 190. But I also told you to take the second half over. They flew over in the second half. I think they scored 102 points second half. So, yeah, it flew over. So, we were on the right side on that one, man. Entertaining game. Now Indiana State looks forward to playing the winner of the next game. We're going to break down Seton Hall.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because remember on the show, I was a little concerned there, Georgia as a dog. But you said, no, throw those trends out the window. Seton Hall is the right side, and they covered the -4. What did you see in that one?
really talented team. Shaheen Holloway has this team on a mission. They're going to win the NIT, and he's going to throw it back to everyone. And this is why they should have made the NCAAs. They were a really good team all season long. One of the better teams in the Big East. Some of the better players in the league as well, especially their point guard, Kadari Richmond. He's a really good player, special. I can't wait to see Indiana State and them lock up. Right now, Indiana State is favored by 3 points. When we get to the present, we'll break down that game a little bit, but I had no doubt about this one. I respect Georgia. As I told you, I'm a big fan of Coach White. Some young guards there that are coming about and going to be really good there. He's building a nice program there, but they weren't ready for Seton Hall. Seton Hall was a tournament team, and they're going to show it by winning this NIT.
All right. Well, we are moving to the present right now. Do you want to start with that game, or do you want to do some NBA first?
Let's start with that game.
All right. Yeah, we're already on it. You're on Seton Hall. I'm pulling up my sports book right now. And what's the bet that you're telling me I need to make?
We're going Seton Hall money line at plus 130. Okay. Indiana State does have
plus 140 offshore.
There you go. Plus 140 then. Well, maybe I need to get you to put it in for me because it's 130 here. But, I just trust Seton Hall. I know that a lot of folks are going to be riding with me on Seton Hall, but that's okay. Indiana State is a good team, but they haven't faced anything like this Seton Hall group. I think the Seton Hall is going to be able to put locks on them defensively and slow them down. Indiana State has been freewheeling and running up and down the court against everybody they face in this tournament. And I think the Seton Hall slows them down. Shaheen Holloway, he prides himself on coaching man-to-man, tough half-court defense. I think they're going to bring that New Jersey, New York-style basketball and take over Indiana that night and send a lot of people home sad. So I'm going to go with, as I said, Seton Hall plus 3, Seton Hall plus 130, Seton Hall to win the NIT.
All right, let's see if Seton Hall can get it done. And, of course, that'll be a fun conclusion for most of the college basketball. And, of course, we'll have three more games total, but two more games that we'll be talking about on Friday as the college basketball season winds down. Speaking of winding down, the NBA season is winding down as well. But unlike the college basketball, that's kind of ending here with the bang, even with the regular season. The NBA regular season winding down can be a minefield, as I talked about this today. You know, people talk about gambling. I think the integrity of the game is hurt more by the way the draft position is set up. Now, when we made this draft, this was, right, the idea is probably 60, 70 years old, and everyone pretty much operated under an honor system back then. Of course, the first thing, you know, I really remember would probably be the Knicks in 85. Now, maybe it happened before, but now it's so transparent and it's so prevalent. It's tough to handicap these games, you know, especially a game like the Blazers and the Hornets tonight where everybody's being ruled out. So I, for one, am a proponent of changing the way this draft system works. But, you know, they're not going to listen to me. Adam Silver's not returning my calls. So we got to make do.
He listened to us on the East West. We just keep putting it out there.
Maybe he will listen. Yeah. I mean, they need to do something because this is just getting worse and worse. And imagine being a season ticket holder for a team like Portland and a team like Charlotte, and you don't have an opportunity to see your best players play. I think that we need to incentivize these guys. You know, one of the ones, the Women's Hockey League, and this is crazy that I'm going for this, I think they should adopt this. It should be based on winning percentage after you're eliminated for the playoffs. So the idea is the team with the highest winning percentage, but it would just keep it so every team is playing hard.
I like that. I like that a lot, Fred. I like that.
And the worst teams aren't getting better anyways. Like, Charlotte's been bad for years. Washington's been bad for years. It took the Kings 20 years to get better. So it's not like this lottery system is necessarily working as improved. Something needs to change. Hopefully it happens soon. But we're going to make do with what we have. The first game we wanted to talk about tonight, we do have some games where both teams are playing for playoff position. And one of them, I think, is fairly interesting. It's the Orlando Magic, who are now plus 5 5-star. They're taking money since we talked, you know, about an hour today setting the show up. The Magic are now +5 out to +174 here on the money line. They're in New Orleans taking on the Pelicans, and both teams would really like to get this win. Of course, the Pelicans hanging on to that fifth seed in the West. They're pretty much out of the play-in, but it's not for sure, so they definitely need to get these wins. The Magic, the Knicks, and the Cavaliers are all kind of bunched up in the 3-4-5 range. So could be the difference between playing Boston in the first round or second round or not if you get these wins. Let's see how it works out. But I think we're going to get great effort from both teams tonight. How do you see the Magic stacking up against the New Orleans Pelicans?
First of all, that's a phenomenal idea that you have that you took from women's hockey. put it in a tweet. And we're going to get this thing going. I'm going to shoot it out to the DM crew. We're going to get that thing retweeted and liked. And guess what? We just talked about the gift and the curse of social media. With the gift is that people can see things that never before would have considered. And maybe Adam Silver or one of his assistants sees your proposal and they end up implementing it. As far as the game tonight, these two teams spread are desperately just trying to, avoid falling into the play-in territory. You got Orlando, five of their next seven games on the road, which really benefits them. They're actually a better road team, in my opinion, than the home team. They've won 8 of 11 on the road. New Orleans has lost 3 of 4 in its home stand, and they have 2 more at home to go. Ingram is out again. This year, they're 7-5, though, without Brandon Ingram. They also are going to be missing, though, Jose Alvarado, and I think he's a big part of their rotation. He brings the energy when he comes in with that second unit. Magic have won 4 straight in the series, man, and they're 8-2 in the last 10 in the series, man. I like everything about this young Orlando team. I think that they're a team that's young but have a lot of adults. They have Jalen Suggs, they have Vaquero, the brothers over there from Michigan. Both of those guys play really well. They just really play a lot older than their age. They take this stuff really seriously, and I think that they're really good pros. And that's the main thing when I think about Magic is young professionals. I think that those kids take every game and really represent that organization well. So I'm going to be on Orlando tonight. I think the Pelicans are sliding right now. I don't think that they factor in the playoffs, man, if they can't get Brandon Ingram back, man. I don't know how it's looking right now, but I know it's supposed to probably miss the rest of the season. So give me a team that's really good on the road with some young kids that I like a lot. I'm going with the Magic +5, and I'm going to take the Magic +174. As I said, they've won 4 straight in this series.
And I'm with you on that Magic play. A couple numbers to back up everything you've been saying. Magic have been excellent on the road this year, 23-14 against the spread as a road team. I watched the last time these two played, and I didn't bet on it.
Yeah.
And it's usually I'm watching the games I bet on, but I was actually intrigued to see how these teams matched up. And that game was played in Orlando on March 21st. Orlando won by 15.
Yeah.
And my main takeaway is the Pelicans are going to struggle against teams who run their offense through bigger forwards. And the idea is with Trey Murphy and Herb Jones and Alvarado when he plays, but he's out tonight. Those guys are excellent at shutting down smaller wings and guards. Where they really struggle is trying to defend bigger players such as Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. So because of the way the Magic match up, where their best offensive players are going against the Pelicans' worst defensive players, and then it's like Jalen Suggs is out there, and he's a good player, and I'm a really big fan of his, but he's out there more for his defense and to be the floor general. So quote-unquote putting the clamps on him doesn't necessarily shut down the Magic's offense the way it would, I don't know, even a team like my favorite team, the Sacramento Kings, where the primary engine of our offense is De'Aaron Fox. And having Herb Jones and Trey Murphy to take turns slowing them down can really put a monkey wrench in our offense, which is why we never do well against the Pelicans. Now you have a bigger team, the Magic. They match up really well. I'm with you on the +5. I was already there, and now you're getting me thinking about this little money line as well. So it seems like we both like the Magic to at least keep things close and possibly get the win in New Orleans against the Pelicans. The second game I want to talk to you about tonight in the NBA, kind of a similar situation. two teams that both need wins, and they're around the same spot in the standings. The Cavaliers are right next to the Magic that we just talked about, and the Suns are sitting right now at number 8, but they're within striking distance of the Pelicans. So both teams would like to get this win here tonight. Now, the Cavaliers, at one point in the season, they went on an 18-2 run, and they look like they could contend to actually upset Boston and win the East. That's how good they look. Since then, however, they've been completely beset by the injury bug. One of the most injured teams in the league, and we see that again tonight. Now, Max Strus is back in the lineup, but Donovan Mitchell is once again a game-time decision. And although he's back, he does not look 100% healthy. And we see that with Donovan Mitchell. And for a short term, I thought that Darius Garland could absorb the lack of scoring, but over the long term, it's been too much for the team. Ty Jerome is going to be out. Dean Wade's going to be out. And Isaac Okoro, who I know fantasy players probably don't think much of him, but he's an excellent defender, help rotation, really good on the team defense aspect. He can miss too. Now, they are happy to have Max Strus back, who has quietly been a solid addition. I didn't really think of that much in that addition in the offseason. I was wondering how much of a product of the Miami Heat culture he was, but he's proven that he's going to be a good player and he can contribute to any playoff level team. They're happy to have Strus back, but still, this is a team that's not 100% here. Phoenix, the only one on the injury report that I'm worried about is Grayson Allen. He's another one that fantasy players aren't going to think much of, but I think he does a lot for that team, especially, right, because everyone else is so cool, right? Devin Booker, he's a cool dude. KD, he's a cool dude, right? They need someone in there to throw some elbows around, right? And get a little, same way Draymond does for the Warriors, right? Steph's so cool. You need a guy out there, raise some intensity, getting chippy. But regardless here, I'm leaning towards the Phoenix Suns. How do you approach this game?
Yeah, I'll be leaning with you towards the Suns. Not an official play for me yet. The Suns just beat Cleveland without Donovan Mitchell, though. Garland took care of his business like he does. That's, you know, he went for 30. I wondered about this Mitchell signing from the beginning, but last year he played so well and ended up working well. So I just felt like Garland did everything that they were bringing him to do, but I know that they made him into a two-guard, just a small two-guard, but Mitchell played two-guard at Louisville, so maybe it'll work out long-term, but he has to get healthy, man. He hasn't been right since late February, dealing with that left knee still. He's only played in 51 games this season, man. He's averaging 27-6, but still, to be who the Cavs want to be, they're going to have Donovan Mitchell because he's their closer. He's their best player. Devin Booker has been on fire for the Suns, man. He just went for 52 points, just beat the New Orleans Pelicans that we just spoke about in the previous segment. And he had...
Did you watch that one?
8 three-pointers. Yeah,
people will say, oh, there's no defense in the NBA. The Pelicans were on him.
Yeah.
He hit so many shots with the hand in his face. That's why I get frustrated with that these guys don't play defense. It's just when a guy like Booker gets hot like that, it doesn't matter. You can bring prime Dennis Rodman. You can't shut him down.
No. Really impressive performance. Especially not with the ability to hand check and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can't.
Hands on the If you can't put your hands on them, you're dead because these guys, if they get any type of space, they're supreme shooters now. The level of shooting skills is unbelievable right now. But that victory, it pulled Phoenix to 2 games behind your Kings in the West, man. So they're right there on their heels, which means that they have to, continue to win. But the Kings do have the tiebreaker, if it comes down to it with the Suns. You guys own the tiebreaker on them. Mitchell's expected to play tonight. You said it's the second end of a back-to-back, and I'm just going to continue to, fade him for right now. So I'm going to go with my official play to be Donovan Mitchell under 22.5 points on this one. The matchup against the Suns is already a tough one for him. Not only is he dealing with the left knee injury, he's also dealing with a team who leads the league in holding shooting guards to three-pointers. They're only getting 1.5 three-pointers from the wing position against this team. A lot of it might have to do with Grayson Allen. We'll see. But I think still their strategy in totality is not allow three-pointers. And we know that Donovan Mitchell, to get to 22.5, is going to need about 5 threes. But that's just how he plays when he's rolling. He's not going to get to the basket because he doesn't have any explosion with that left knee problem. So he's going to be looking to just shoot. And as we said, Phoenix doesn't give up 3 points to shooting guards, man. The best in the league. at holding them down. And I think that continues tonight. So we're going to go with Donovan Mitchell under 22 and a half points. As I said, he's went under on his point total the last five games. All right, Fred, let's get to the ball and parlay, man.
All right. We're going to be in the same game, but we're going to go two different ways to approach this.
Okay.
I'm taking the over in the Washington Wizards and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers have averaged 128 points per game in their last seven wins. And I think this is going to be a fast-paced game. One of the keys to LeBron James' longevity has been his ability to pace himself. It feels like the last couple years, it's preseason until the All-Star break, and then he really kicks in. But with everything on the line, we talked about that precarious play-in seeding over in the West. The Lakers are going to be going all out. At the same time, I do believe Washington's going to be able to keep pace. Kyle Kuzma sat last night, so he should be ready for tonight, and I think he's going to be fired up against his old teammates. I like this game to go over, and I think it correlates with yours, because the only way that I don't believe this gets there is if it's a blowout. So what do you have in this game?
Yeah, I'm definitely on the Wizards plus 13. They upset Milwaukee last night. You got two teams on back-to-back, so I'm always taking the younger team in points on back-to-back games. Wizards are younger, man. The Lakers, this is the last game of a road trip. They've been really good on the road trip. They went 4-1. This is the last one. That sixth game on the road. We know how the older veteran teams tend to approach these final road game. So I think that they just get it done in the fourth quarter and try to just finish it, but I don't expect a lot of effort throughout the night. I think that the Lakers just keep it close early and finish them in the fourth, or they approach about we're going to start fast and try to cruise. And even if they do that, I think that the Wizards can backdoor it. As you said, Kyle Kuzma will be really hyped for this game. He set out last night, so he should be at full strength tonight. They've been playing really good since Poole's moved to point guard. He's starting now. He's getting everybody involved. He's not forcing shots. So maybe that's the position that he needs to concentrate on for this team. Washington, they're looking to close their regular season, man, and avoiding the worst record in franchise history, man. They're two losses shy of matching the two worst records in franchise history that they had from 2000, 2001, and 2008, 2009. I think that this team has too many good players to fall into that category. And Kuzma kind of put his foot in his mouth when he said his little comments about Detroit. Mm-hmm. So I think those guys are going to fight hard these last games to try to not be the worst team in Wizards history, man. So give me the Wizards plus 13. And I'm not going to lie, I'm thinking about sprinkling just a tad bit on the money line just to see it. It's such good odds. What is it, plus 600 or something like that?
Oh, I might put it. It's going to be higher than that. Plus 559.
About plus 600. So I'll put a half a unit or something on that. But I'll be loading up on the Wizards plus 13. It's one of those situations where when Washington sees the Lakers come to town, it's one of the games of the year. The crowd's going to be there. They're going to be hyped. They're going to try to play their best because of the energy in the building. When the Lakers pull up to Washington, they're like, I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to get back to L.A. Long flight from Toronto last night. I think they'll be a little lethargic. So we're going with the Wizards plus 13. The spread's going with the over on that game. Guys, we appreciate you for tuning in. Another episode is down. As I said, me and Spread have done hundreds of them. This is our 26th. That's on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify and things like that. Audio Boom and all of those different platforms. Got a really, really exciting night coming up. We got an exciting week coming up. We'll be back here on Friday to break down the ladies championship. I didn't get into the NIT, but you guys pretty much know what my play is. They play tomorrow night. We won't be on for that, but you guys already know I'm going to be on Seton Hall plus the points right there. Anything for the people, Spread, before we get out of here?
No, man, let's catch these winners tonight, and I can't wait to hear your breakdowns at the NCAA on Friday.
Yeah, let's get it, man. Final Four approaching really fast right down the street in Arizona. As always, this show is dedicated to the greatest Houston sports fan I know to walk the earth, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. I do this for you, Dad. Hey, it's always us versus the machine. We'll see you guys on Friday. Best of luck to you all. This is The Wagering World.